Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this Monday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a great day to this point. Trey Wingo is on the line with us. We said we're going to talk to him to kick off this hour, and we're always excited to talk to him. Of course, host on Golic and Wingo. You can hear every morning right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and a guy who did another fantastic job on the NFL draft. Trey, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Well, you, in all seriousness, that is a hard thing to navigate over those 3 days, and you've always done a really, really good job with that. How different was it this year trying to navigate, you know, because of the circumstances that we're in?
Yeah, we had a tremendous team. I mean, our director, Jeff Nelson, our producers, Brian Ryan, writer, Rob Adamski, our coordinating producer, Seth Markman. I mean, it was an unbelievable effort. And, you know, 53 days before the draft, we had nothing set up except what we were going to do in Vegas. And in a span of 53 days, with obviously collaboration with the NFL Network and NFL, we were able to pull this thing off. And it was just a Herculean effort by so many people. And I was happy to be a part of it. But, you know, from my perspective, the only difference for me was I was just alone in the studio.
Right.
Normally we're on the set together like we were in Nash Vegas last year, and, you know, having a blast and kibitzing back and forth. So that part of it was different. But for the most part, you know, it was just like a regular draft. I just had to talk to people in boxes instead of people in the studio next to me or on the set next to me. And I'm hopeful, obviously, the next year we'll be doing it the more conventional way, but I have to say I thought it went off as well as it possibly could have from a technical standpoint.
I could not agree with you more. Hat tip to you guys. You guys not only pulled it off, you pulled it off with flying colors, and it was fantastic. I mean, little, right? We all went in, and I can only imagine. We just go in as viewers, and we talk to John Robinson and, you know, Titans players about what this is going to be like and people who cover it, but until you go through it, but you're in a different – you're going to have to go through it literally in the middle of it, in the eye of the storm, so to speak. And, man, you guys, it was flawless. And to see, like, you know, the families and the cribs, I mean, Kingsbury's living it up pretty good. It was just cool just to see some of the – I think it humanized some of these guys, right?
Yeah, I think it did. You know, I mean, I was talking to Roger Goodell Saturday during the rounds 4 through 7, and I think – you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? That's the old line. And I think that there are some things that we're going to try and incorporate next year into the draft in Cleveland that came out of this. You know, it was a more intimate experience, for lack of a better term. And I think that if we can get some of that intimacy with those war room setups, and, you know, players and coaches are going to fight against that next year. They only did it because they had to this year. If we can get some of that along with the normal insanity that we get from, you know, 650,000 people like we had in Nashville last year, then we'll take it. Although I got to say, Cliff Kingsbury's crib may have won the weekend. Vrabel's crew may have won the weekend as well. What the hell was going on there? We had Frozone. We had, I think, one of Vrabel's kids in a jersey, and the mysterious person in the back left corner, for lack of a better term.
Trey, yeah. He addressed that. He did a Zoom call with the
luckily,
media afterwards.
That provided us lots of material on Friday's show. So we were very thankful
content,
for
baby.
That. Yes, because we had
exactly.
to break down everything. Was he in the bathroom? Was he not in the bathroom? Of course, all of that was addressed and squashed. But it was fun.
Right.
We certainly had fun with it on Friday. And we had the mullet and the old throwback jersey and Vrabel taking out a big chaw out of his mouth. I mean, it was a lot to digest. It really was. But, man, like I said, it gave us great content on Friday.
Well, you know, we all make fun of Cliff because he obviously, Cliff Kingsbury, the Cardinals head coach, because he clearly wanted that shot in particular of his house. I mean, this was a recruiting tool. He was the show pony, no question about it. I think Vrabel took the show pony theme in a different direction, and it also worked for him.
I did see your interview with the commissioner on Saturday. I would have preferred he be in a bathrobe open a little bit, like little chest hair, and maybe with a pipe with during that interview with you.
I asked if he had a smoking jacket, if he could put that on. He's like, I got to do chores around the house. How about Henry Ruggs, by the way?
Yes.
Kudos to him, knowing who he is and where he's going, experiencing his draft, going to Vegas in a robe. I'm just out here in a robe, baby. I'm so fast, I don't even need to get dressed.
That was good stuff. Trey Wingo on the line with us. So we've kind of got a mixed bag here. Since the draft, really leading up to the draft, all the talk about Jadeveon Clowney and where's he going to go, and the Titans are in the mix, and it's kind of a mixed bag on how people feel. It's like 50-50. People really want him, or people say, nah, you know, takes too many plays off, always hurt, you know, all that. Where do you stand on Clowney?
The price will dictate whether or not it's a good signing or not, and it's not a surprise to me that both Jadeveon Clowney and Cam Newton are still out there, because there are two players that, when they're healthy, can be really, really dominant players. But we're in a situation now where we had an offseason where you couldn't get your hands, your medical people's hands on players. And there are question marks for both of these guys. So I think that's why both of them are still out there. If they had been able to sort of had gone through the regular offseason once over, I think they'd both be signed by now. But that obviously has not been able to be the case. Look, if you can get Clowney at the right price, he's totally worth it. And I know that people always focus in on sacks, focus in on pressures, because a sack gets a quarterback to the ground, no question. But a pressure can be just as disruptive. And his pressure rate, and we have this, you know, we have a million different advanced metrics that we look at now called the pass rush win rate. Clowney's was pretty good last season. And you're right. You wonder sometimes why we don't see every game or on a more consistent basis, because no one's going to do it on a regular basis, every day or every game. But the game he had Monday night against the 49ers, where he was a human wrecking ball in that contest, I mean, he had 9 pressures in that game alone. You still look for that kind of spark on a more regular basis. But for the right price, everyone should be wanting Jadeveon Clowney on their roster.
We're talking to Trey Wingo from ESPN. And Trey, on a sidebar, you can imagine the conversations we've had about this. And one of the things we hit on was there was a time in NFL history that you were evaluating defensive players without the benefit of even having the sack number. So we've debated on how important or is the sack almost a little bit overrated. And that's a little bit where you're going. But think about you know, trying to evaluate free agents in the 70s where you didn't have the sack total. We were talking about Mean Joe Green, who doesn't have officially a sack in his entire career.
Right. You're right. And I mean, I don't want to say the sack is – I think it's over-glorified. I don't think it's a useless stat in any way, shape, or form. But, like, if you're an offensive lineman, you could block the guy for 95% of the game and you give up one sack. He's had a hell of a game and you didn't. I mean, that's not a – smart way to interpret data, if we're being honest about it. Now, you can look at a guy like Frank Clark, who I believe in all 3 playoff games the Chiefs played had the deciding, although it wasn't really the deciding sack against Houston because they had blown him out at that point. But, you know, in the AFC Championship game, Frank Clark got Tannehill on the ground, and Frank Clark got Jimmy Garoppolo on the ground. They gave the ball back to the Chiefs with a 4-point lead with about 2 minutes to play in that game. So, yeah, sacks are important. But I don't think they're the indicator of whether you have a good player who's played a full game. Can they come at peak times when it matters? Absolutely. There's no question about that. But if you're looking at how a defensive rusher or a offensive lineman plays, you can't just point to, well, he gave up a sack or this sack. I mean, like, guy's given up a bunch of sacks in the season. Yeah, there's a problem. But I think it has to be interpreted through the right lens, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Trey is a guy that does TV broadcast for the Nashville Predators. Me as the play-by-play guy and my color guy, sometimes after a road game, we'll get on the plane and we're thinking, hey, really good broadcast. Man, that was awesome. The team won. And our guys behind the scenes, our producer, our director, will say, man, we were dealing with all kinds of stuff behind the scenes. You guys have no idea. I can only imagine what it was like for you, Trey, with so many moving parts during the draft. There's the stuff that we probably never saw when we were watching. What was going on behind the scenes? What was that like? How chaotic was it behind the scenes?
Well, it was really interesting, right? Because obviously Connecticut is still very much closed for business. So on a normal day, ESPN's campus in Bristol will have anywhere from 1,800 to 2,000 people on campus. And right now we're at less, they're trying to keep it at less than 200 a day. So you had to have what's called a safe transit letter even to get onto the campus to go do anything. And, you know, it's a letter that says he's an essential employee and he needs to be in here. So in the studio with me, there was me. We had two camera operators and a floor manager, and that was it. The entire research department, normally I have a researcher there handing cards and all this kind of stuff. They were all working remotely. Obviously, everyone else was working remotely. I had a friend of mine say it was the quietest control room he's ever been in. And we should point out that people need to understand this, the way it worked at ESPN, you're not allowed on the campus if you don't have a face covering. So not only were there very few people in there, but everybody that worked that for that broadcast, the entire time they were working, was wearing a face mask and a face covering. And I think that's one of the things that really goes unnoticed, because it can get a little crazy in there. There's a million different things, and you're trying to have communication between everybody in the control room and everybody on the set. And that the guys were able to do that over that 3-day time frame while wearing the face coverings was really, really incredible.
Talking to Trey Wingo of ESPN, of course, co-host of Golic and Wingo, that you can hear in Nashville on ESPN 94.9. So, Trey, looking at some quarterbacks that one just signed and one is still available, let's start with Andy Dalton. What did you make of his move to the Cowboys?
You know, look, obviously there's a lot of people going, oh, this means this because Dak hasn't been signed. And I will say this first and foremost. The Cowboys have reverse-engineered this thing to perfection. I mean, like, literally, they have now taken care of a running back, a right tackle, an inside linebacker. They signed a pass rusher off the street who hasn't played in 2015, and now they signed a backup quarterback before they've gotten their quarterback taken care of. Oh, and they also paid $100 million to Amari Cooper, okay, the wide receiver. That is not how you do this. I mean, you take care of your franchise quarterback first, and then you deal with all this other stuff. So if I'm Dak's camp, I'm like, okay, what does it take? And if you look at the numbers that Tony Romo put up, I believe it was after the 2012 season, where he set the Cowboys record for 4,903 passing yards and all his numbers. They are strikingly similar to the season that Dak Prescott just put up there, where he had 4,902 yards and completed 64% of his throws. And I mean, the numbers are almost identical. And Tony was taken care of, and we're still waiting on Dak, and he's the first franchise tagged quarterback in Cowboys franchise history. So there's obviously some stuff going on there. But if you look at the deal for Dalton, it's a one-year deal that could be worth up to $7 million with incentives, but it's really more like a one-year, $3 million deal. Now, he's from there. He wasn't going to be playing in Cincinnati anymore when they took Joe Burrow number one overall. And I believe that had we not been in the situation we're in with the pandemic, I don't think Andy Dalton would have signed this deal. I think he would have found a much better deal and gone somewhere else. But he lives in Dallas. He's from there. So in his mind, he's thinking, okay, I can ride this thing out for a year and we'll figure it out as a backup. I don't think the plan is to have him be the starter over Dak Prescott. I think the plan is we might have the best backup in football right now, because what we're seeing outside of Dak Prescott or Eli Manning, or for most of his career, Peyton Manning, and for most of his career, Tom Brady, quarterbacks go down. I mean, they do. And the Cowboys over the last few years, I think, were 1-6 or 1-7 with their backup quarterbacks, some collection of Brandon Whedon and Matt Castle and others. They just significantly upgraded their backup quarterback position. I mean, I think you can make a really compelling argument that the backup QB is probably a top 25, top 30 position on your football team. And Cooper Rush had all of one pass attempt in the NFL. He was their backup quarterback. It certainly gives them a flex if for whatever reason they can't come to a contract. But I think they still want to get that done. I mean, they're offering Dak a deal that would make him the highest paid player in football based on how you want to look at the language. And this was a one-year deal. If they were really serious about not having him be the franchise quarterback going forward, I think Andy Dalton would have gotten a much better, bigger deal. So it's just a weird juxtaposition, and it's a weird juxtaposition that the Cowboys have allowed to happen with the way they've done this. But I do think it's just – I think it's just improving the backup position right now.
Do you think looking at the Cowboys – I mean, we know how long it's been. I watched the NFC Championship game yesterday where they, you know, go to win their last Super Bowl. It's been that long.
38-27 over the Green Bay Packers. Yeah,
yeah. And so they just haven't gotten there. I mean, Tony Romo had some good years, but not good enough. And I look at their draft, I look at free agency, and I'm not saying all this because of Andy Dalton, but I feel like the Cowboys are in a position where They should win. They should win that division because it's not very good. They should compete for Super Bowls, but do we really believe that they're going to?
Well, you know, it's interesting, right? The talent is there, and the talent was there last year, and it just didn't come together at the right times. They did. I think they beat one team with a winning record last year, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was the Philadelphia Eagles, and they didn't have a winning record when they played them, but they ended up with a winning record. You know, they started 3-0 on the season, all against teams that weren't very good, and they finished, 5-8 the rest of the year. So it was a massively disappointing season, but the margin of error usually in the NFL is so razor thin. You know, I mean, I think I always look at one possession games as a real indicator of whether your team is good or not. And I think the Cowboys did not have a really good stellar record along those lines. So I guess what I'm saying is I don't look at how the results dictated the talent last year. I think the talent is there. They just didn't get it over the finish line. And I had a lot of issues with coaching and some of the play calling. Kellen Moore, who was really in his first year as a full-time offensive coordinator, you know, there were times where things got messy and got ridiculous in terms of play selection. And they'd go away from the running game, even though they paid Ezekiel Elliott all that money in the offseason. When he held out, by the way, you know, and has had some suspension issues in his past. I just think there wasn't a cohesive plan at times, and I think that showed from a guy who was a rookie play caller more than anything else. So I do believe the talent is there. Now it's up to Mike McCarthy. Mike McCarthy has a very stated goal from the owner, Jerry Jones. He wanted a head coach that had a winning record in the NFL and knew what it take to win a Super Bowl, and Mike McCarthy did that with Aaron Rodgers. So the bar is set pretty high for Mike McCarthy. He's not going to be hanging around for a bunch of years at 8-8, 7-9 like Jason Garrett was. I can promise you that.
No doubt about it. Let's finish with this real quick, Trey. I gave my Don Shula story, my personal story at the beginning of the show. Do you have a Don Shula story?
Yeah, you know, the last time I saw him, we did an event together at Super Bowl 47 in New Orleans, and, you know, he was still as sharp as a tack and really hilarious. And, you know, he was in a mobilized scooter at that time and was having some trouble mobility-wise getting around. But, you know, we did an event before the Super Bowl talking X's and O's, and he was just as sharp as he could always be. And it was just so – I mean, they called him Mount Shula in Miami just because he was just a rock. And, you know, a large part of our show that happened right after we went off the air today is going to be dedicated to Don and the things that he's done. I mean, you know, it shouldn't surprise any of us that someone passes away at 90, I guess. But I guess the last couple of times I had seen him or interacted with him, he looked so alive, even though he was still, you know, having some issues getting around. It was just sort of hard to take.
Yeah, good story. Hey, thanks for sharing. Thanks for doing this as always. Good to hear from you. You have a great week. We'll do it again soon.
You got it, guys. Whenever. Talk to you soon.
All right. Trey Wingo, Golic and Wingo, right here on 102.5 The Game and 94.9. Appreciate him joining us, of course, host NFL Live and hosted the draft. Did fantastic work. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.